Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 4 of Homers at the Bat. After a long layoff, we're back. Joe and I had a little bit of life getting in the way. been working a lot. Joe put together a 10-year high school reunion, and you know we had a lot of downtime. But we're back, and Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good today. I just got done teaching Sunday school, so.
Yeah.
You know what they say about that? The best time of the week for religious people is right after church or religious school. You got 7 days left. That's the best.
I never heard that before. That's pretty good.
You never heard that?
No, that's pretty funny. Sort of like my favorite part of that movie is when it was over.
Yeah, exactly.
Same sort of idea. Yeah, so.
Same concept.
So I spent my morning doing some writing for fantasy baseball. We talked about it, and I'm really excited for what I'm putting together. But I'm taking a step back from that. We're continuing our divisional 2014 review. We're going to take this up into the season. Today is the AL Central. And, Joe, I just want to let you know that we tried a couple times to get this going, and we couldn't, so you saved yourself from me asking you about that stupid dress that everybody was obsessing over this week.
What dress is that? Like, my sister was telling me about that. I missed it. So people were like, is it white and blue or black and yellow? Is that what it is?
It was black and blue and white and gold. And all I had to do with was the picture was with bad light.
Right.
So some people saw it as white and gold, and some people saw it as black and blue. But then the whole internet like lost its mind over it. And then
I'm so glad I disconnected from social media 2 weeks ago, because I had no idea that was a big thing. Like, Nora and I saw it, and we were just like, I feel like anyone with half a brain just says, oh, it's just a picture in poor lighting, and they moved on.
Yeah, well, I was like, oh, this is gold and white. Well, that's what I saw it as. And then when I saw it was red and black, I was like, okay, I could see it. And I was like, Kate, what color is this dress? She's like, I don't care. Why are you showing
exactly.
me?
Exactly, yeah. That's the only sane response to that. It's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I was like, okay, so, all right. Anyways, moving on. We will talk about baseball on this. Like I said, we're going to talk about the AL Central. And what we did, since it's been months since we did this, is all we're doing is taking a look back and seeing if the team was successful in 2014. Now, that doesn't mean having a good record. You could have a good record and be unsuccessful, and you could have a bad record and be successful. But just wanted to take a look back, review 2014, hopefully as a look forward to 2015 as well. So first up is the AL Central winning Detroit Tigers. They were 90-72, and their season ended when they were swept by the Orioles in the ALDS. Joe, did the Tigers have a successful or unsuccessful season?
You know, they're one of those tough teams to kind of definitively decide whether they had a successful season or an unsuccessful season, because it seems like they've led the division for like 4 years or so, uh-huh. right? Like three or 4 years now. They've always been a competitive team for, it seems like, over a decade, and yet I never see them, like they haven't, I think they have one title to show for it in 06. And it's been, you know, 8 years since that. And then they made the World Series, you know, 2 years ago or so, right?
Yeah. Well, they made it in at least in 2012, because that's when the Giants beat them.
3 years ago, right?
Yeah, 3 years ago, yeah, because 2013 was the Red Sox won the
Correct.
World Series. So it had been pretty hard for the Tigers and the Red Sox to make it.
So I feel like they've been trying to build a championship team for years, and they just never seem to make it happen, at least in the last 8 years or so. Even though they have that 90-72 record, I'm hesitant to call them a successful team.
I am not hesitant in the fact that I don't think the Tigers were successful at all. And I was thinking about the Tigers, and yeah, they always seem to have this squad that's put together for you know, World Series or bust. They're getting up there in age, they're getting old, and every year they sort of have one thing that they do wrong and do poorly, and that seems to shoot them in the foot. And this year it was they just could not get away from Joe Nathan as their closer.
The bullpen, exactly.
Yeah, the bullpen. And Joe Nathan specifically, he had a 4.8 ERA, and he pitched 58 innings. Like, they just kept throwing him out there, and he was garbage. He was so bad, and he just kept blowing game after game. So I think that because of the way that the team is leveraged for right now, and by right now I mean they were leveraged for 2013 and 2014, that they were pretty unsuccessful. I think their window might be closing, especially if they don't get they don't re-sign David Price, who they got from the Rays in the middle of the season. They are just... they have a lot of money tied up and a lot of old guys that are going to start declining and falling apart. And I just don't think that they had a successful 2014, keeping that in mind.
Yeah. I'm looking at their roster right now, and I don't think I see anyone under, I mean, Anthony Gose is 24.6, but as far as like their hitters that matter, like Kinsler's over 30, Cabrera's over 30, Martinez is over 30, Cespedes is 29 in 4 months, but he's, you know, he's going to be 30 within the year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an old roster. That's officially kind of an over-the-hill roster.
Yeah, and a lot of them are signed, you know, to longer contracts. Like, I think Cabrera signed for a long contract. Victor Martinez re-signed this year. You know, Kinsler, he's got to be 33. That guy's been around forever. That's why I think that they were unsuccessful. This is sort of like their all-in moment, and now it's passed. I mean, and then even if you look at, you know, who's been lost to them. I mean, they lost Scherzer. They replaced him with Alfredo Simon. Like, come on.
Right. Yeah, it's terrible. They lost Fielder. Was that last year or the year prior?
Yeah, they traded him for Kinsler.
For Kinsler, yeah. And Kinsler was, you know, decent last year, but certainly declined somewhat. Mm-hmm. Cespedes, I mean, I guess they could hope that Cespedes is going to give them more than he gave them in Oakland, because it's a hitter's ballpark as opposed to a pitcher's ballpark. But I don't know. Like, I was having that same feeling leading up to this podcast. I think they're on the outs. We mentioned the hitters, but, you know, even the pitching staff, David Price is pushing 30 this year. He's going to turn 30. Verlander's 32. Anibal Sanchez is 31, who I thought was much younger than that. Alfredo Simon is almost 34. And then they don't really have a fifth starter, so.
Yeah, it's a real mess there in Detroit, and like I said, they were pretty much put together for home run World Series or bust, and they didn't hit the World Series. And I know they say, you know, just get in and see what happens, but they lost to the Orioles. It wasn't like they hit the Royals buzzsaw that sort of went through the AL playoffs last year. They just sort of got swept by what I think is an inferior squad in the Orioles.
Agreed. What would you say, like, if you had to pick one player you're excited about going into next year on the Tigers, is there even one that you think could, like, be exciting? Like, is it Nick Castellanos?
Well, they traded the guy that I was perennially up on, which was Drew Smyly, and now he's the Ray. But, I mean, if I had to pick one, I guess J.D. Martinez, but that guy's only put together half a season. I mean, once he went to – I think he was released by the Astros, and then the Tigers picked him up, and he was pretty hot. I mean, he's entering his age 28 season, so this will probably be as good as it gets with him. But, I mean, J.D. Martinez, I mean, Castellanos, no.
Exactly, yeah. Not anybody. Maybe, I mean, Alex Avila maybe establishes himself as like a top five offensive catcher, but I see the same thing. I just don't see a very exciting team.
Yeah, so they sort of leveraged themselves to last season, and they're But the thing is they're paying out in the future.
Exactly.
On these big contracts. And I know it's not a salary cap, but these teams have budgets. And when you're right. going to have like a 34-year-old Miguel Cabrera who can't walk and a 39-year-old Victor Martinez who had freaking knee surgery, well, it's March now, so last month, it's right. just I think their window is closed, and I think everybody is seeing it but Detroit, and that's the problem.
Yeah, it's got the feel of that Yankees team from a few years back that maybe like 3-4 years ago when you could kind of tell they were locked into the A-Rod contract. They threw out another Jeter contract. They were paying, you know, certain players on their team just way above what they were going to be worth in a few years, and it just feels like this is the beginning of that phase for the Tigers, where they're going to have those inflated contracts that they can't get out from.
You're talking about like the Mark Teixeiras of the world and stuff, where they paid him that massive contract and now they're sort of stuck with it.
And just not playing the guy. Like, that could be Miguel Cabrera in 2 years.
Yeah, well, I think even 80%, 75% Miguel Cabrera is going to be, you know, better than what most teams trot out there, but he's not going to be Miguel Cabrera anymore, and that's sort of what they need, because outside of Miggy and maybe Victor Martinez and JD Martinez, there's not much to this lineup. I mean,
but Miguel Cabrera, I mean, can you even be sure you're going to get a 75-80% of him? Like, he had a huge power drop off last year. I think he had under 30 home runs. He still hit over 300, but that's because he's a good hitter, and he'll continue to do that into his late 30s. But the power disappeared. He's still not working out, and it's almost, you know, March. It is March. It's March 1st day. Yeah. So, I mean, Cabrera's had a lot of time to recover, and he's not there. And he's never been known for his ability to stay in shape. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where it seemed to always come naturally to him, so he never had to really try. And right. so you could see that everything declined pretty quickly. But, I think he'll still stay at 75-80% over the next, you know, few years. I think in, you know, we're talking 2016 and beyond. I mean, his on-base percentage is still, it's still 371, which is incredible. So he's got that eye. He's got a good plate discipline. So I feel like the power is gonna drop a little bit. And it was still pretty good, but you could see that he was losing a little bit because he was losing homers for doubles.
I mean,
he hit 52 doubles last year, which is insane. But that's just, you know, he was hurt. He's starting to lose a little bit of power, so those dingers are becoming off the wall and stuff like that.
Well, here's my question about Miggy, because, again, he's one of the only interesting players to talk about on this team. But he's only going to be 32 this year, but you have to keep in mind that he came to the league at 18, and he's played in, I want to say, he's had four World Series runs or something like that.
He's played
in three or four World Series. Dating all the way back to his time with the Marlins in the 90s. And he could play, like, that 32 could be a lot more like a 36-year-old for other players. So we could be seeing, like, really just the end of his, the beginning of the end of his career.
Yeah, it definitely could be that. And I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if he dropped off dramatically. But I just think that, you know, the batter's eye doesn't, you know, wear out. It's sort of an old man skill anyways, you know, taking pitches and stuff. But I looked it up. You know what actually surprised me? He's only played in two World Series.
Really?
I think what it is there was a big space where they didn't even make the playoffs. 2003, he went to the World Series with Miami, well, then it was Florida, with the Marlins, and then he didn't make the playoffs again until 2011.
Wow. Yeah, I guess I was thinking he was on that 97 team, but I guess that was different.
He's not that old. He's an old man, but he's not that old.
Right.
So So, okay. So I say it was unsuccessful, and Joe, you were sort of, you weren't sure.
I'm going to say unsuccessful. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, a team that won the division and got close to the World Series was unsuccessful, but like you said, it was just such poor planning to continue to play Joe Nathan. He's still marked as their closer, so you got to wonder what's going on with the management of that team.
Yeah, well, I think another problem there is, what is the other option? I mean, Jabba Chamberlain, Joaquin Soria will probably end up with that job in midseason just because Nathan's 40 now, so they'll probably... He'll either get hurt or be such diminished, or have such diminished results that they'll have to turn to Soria. Probably, I'd say by early June.
Yeah, Soria's not bad. I like him better than Chamberlain. Chamberlain's kind of he's never even close for a team, to my knowledge. So I think that's something that's a relic of, you know, 8 years ago when he was on the Yankees and everyone thought he was going to be a closer, and he never did.
Yeah.
Al Albuquerque's a possibility. He put up decent stats last year. I think they have their top prospect, I believe, is a closer, like Carlos Rondon or Rodon.
Oh, Carlos Rodon, yeah. He's a heat thrower, yeah. I think he is tabbed to be the closer of the future.
So I think he's a closer, but again, he's only pitched, he pitched 24 innings last year, so that's not anything to get too excited about. He's still a little ways off.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw with Strickland, too, if you bring him up too fast, what can happen is they can just give up
bomb completely after, fall apart.
Yeah, bomb after bomb after bomb. Oh, goodness. He's coming back from, I'm looking at Bruce Rondon. He's coming back from Tommy John last March. So he's right now getting in that window where he can come back. So,
well, that's Bruce Rondon. I'm talking about Carlos Rodon.
Carlos Rodon. I think you're getting him mixed up with somebody else.
No, it's their, oh, I, you're right. I'm looking at the White Sox. Good call. Okay, so I didn't even see a guy for the Detroit Tigers that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, I was like Bruce Rondon. I'm like, okay, I didn't think he was that highly touted. I mean, but
no, yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah, Carlos Rodon. Yeah. But he's a White Sox, so.
Right.
Anyways,
I say an unsuccessful season, and I think they'll finish third, second or third in the division. It'll be disappointing.
Oh, wow. Third. Wow. Well, we'll go down the line to see who you think might go ahead of them. I think I know one team that you think will go ahead of them, and that was last year's AL champion, Kansas City Royals, who ended up 89-73. They were in second. They swept the entire AL. In the playoffs, the A's, Angels, and Orioles, and they ended up losing really because they didn't send Eric Hosmer in the Game 7, but they ended up losing to the Giants 4-3.
Right.
Joe, did they have a successful season?
Of course. I would say absolutely they had a successful season. They were able to develop their prospects. And again, I'm not looking at the postseason where some of them struggled, like Hosmer and Moustakas. But they had Lorenzo Cain finally became the player that they traded to get from the Brewers. I believe this is the Brewers years ago, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So they finally got the player they had traded for 4 or 5 years ago. And he's their three hole hitter for the future, foreseeable future. Alcides Escobar put together a good year. Alex Gordon put together another good year. Eric Hosmer finally blossomed. Mike Moustakas finally blossomed. Salvador Perez, who had been kind of coming on over the course of a couple of years, finally, you know, came out. And I say they absolutely had a great season. Oh, Yordano Ventura for moving to the pitching staff. He blossomed. Danny Duffy had a very solid year with an ERA under 3. So I'm going to say absolutely it was a successful season for them.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. The Royals, I honestly, I think we talked about it in the first podcast. They were an afterthought. I mean, I didn't see them making it to the playoffs, let alone making it all the way to the World Series. So when you have those sort of expectations, like when you are honestly sort of an upper middle of the road team, you know, you just want to get into the playoffs and see what happens. And they rode a hot streak. They rode a lot of luck, if I'm going to be completely honest. And it's hard to say that as a, you know, the Giants beat the Nationals because of, you know, crazy wild pitches and stuff. But, yeah, I think that they did have a successful season. It's hard to say otherwise. There's no way to say that they didn't, because it's not, they're not like the Tigers where they were built to win the World Series or nothing. They're
exactly. They've been a building team.
Yeah, and they took a huge step forward last season. Do you have any concern that they might take a step back now after potentially overachieving last season?
I think a lot of people will probably say that that's the case, that a lot of these guys are not for real. But it's hard for me to look at a guy like Moustakas, and who's still under 27, say they're not for real. A guy like Salvador Perez is going to be 25. Hosmer's 25. Lorenzo Cain's, you know, 28, 29. Alex Gordon's 31, but he's been doing it for a few years now. I look at them and think that there's nobody on the team that was never a highly touted prospect. It's not like JD Martinez, where he comes out of nowhere, or Michael Brantley, and everybody goes, oh my gosh, you know, where's this guy been for the last 7 years? It's more like, oh, this is finally the guy that hasn't been around for the last 4 or 5 years.
It's been a steady build instead of a, you know, a sudden breakout is what you're saying, right? It's all stuff that we expected to happen, and it all sort of came together at once.
Exactly. Everybody just kind of came together. And these teams are really built that way. You know, like this Royals team was built that way. The Tampa Bay Ray teams of the past are built that way, where they stock up on these top 10 picks over the course of 5 years, and then they all kind of come together at the same time.
Okay, I gotcha. I agree that there's not one thing that really sticks out that you can point to that says, well, you know, this is why they played so far above their heads. I mean, there was a bit of the luck factor. You know, I don't trust bunts and that sort of thing. And a good amount of their postseason success was built on bunts. But the thing that does worry me was they absolutely abused Salvador Perez. Like, he had the most innings caught last season before the playoffs started, like, by far. It was him and Jonathan Lucroy, and then he just sort of kept going. So I'm just worried that this season we're going to see, you know, the legs getting a little weak, because then after that, like, he went off and played in some exhibition games in Japan. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, you just came off this long World Series run, and you caught almost every single – I think he caught every single inning of the World Series. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to go over to Japan and catch some more innings for fun. Like, if I was the Royals, I would have been like, all right, Salvador Perez, this is what you do. You lay down all postseason. Don't use your legs, because we're going to need them – we need them next year. But hey, what are you going to do? I mean – that's the only thing that really worries me, that and the loss of James Shields. But I think that the emergence of Yordano Ventura and Danny Duffy will help mitigate that loss.
Agreed.
Because Shields, you know, he was good. He wasn't great. He's going to do really well in Petco. He's going to do really well for the Padres. But he was not, you know, we're not talking about trying to replace Clayton Kershaw here. So I think... you know, Ventura takes that step forward, becomes the ace, the James Shields. Danny Duffy sort of comes up, takes the role of the Yordano Ventura, the young upstart guy.
Agreed. Now, where do you stand on, I know I'm kind of shifting away from last season into what's been happening in the offseason for them, but they signed Edinson Volquez. Where do you kind of stand on him? Do you think that a return... coming away from, I believe he was in San Diego last year?
Volquez was, if I'm remembering correctly, he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Because I believe that was who the Giants played against in Yes, he was on the Pirates.
You're right.
That's who the Giants play against in the play-in game.
Okay, so he was on the Pirates. So do you believe, and that's kind of a, I'd say more of a pitcher's park than a hitter's park, or somewhere in a mid-tier park. Do you think a return to a spacious ballpark like Kansas City, do you think that that's going to improve his numbers? He had a pretty good season last year. I think he was under 3 or right about at 3.
Yeah, so Edison Volquez, I very much am starting to believe in the Ray Searidge magic, the Pittsburgh Pirates pitching coach. Try saying that one 3 times fast. Jesus.
Pittsburgh Pirates pitching coach.
Yeah, I very much believe in him in what he does for teams, because before Volquez was sort of starting to get the like bounce around syndrome, you know, Rangers, Reds, Padres, and then he gets to the Pirates and he calms down. He sort of, I guess, changes his approach, because I'm looking at his profile. He was much more successful. There's a good amount of luck in there. His BABIP was pretty low and his left on base was pretty high, which mm-hmm. can be taught. I mean, Searidge sort of did that a lot. He made Francisco Liriano, relevant again. Just sort of does that with the pitching staff. So I think that if Volquez took what he learned from Searidge and, you know, starts pitching to contact, you know, pitching into ground balls. I mean, we talked about it before. The Royals have a great defense behind their pitching staff. I think that was a big part of their success. So I think mm-hmm. Volquez can replicate his success as long as he sort of remembers the teachings of Ray Searidge and doesn't, try to strike everybody out.
And I would imagine that the Kansas City pitching coach is going to kind of be repeating that mantra of pitching to contact because their strength is in their outfield, their defensive outfield, and their defensive infield.
Yeah, they have great defense. And that I remember we talked about on the first podcast, like that was really what worried me about them. It wasn't necessarily their hitting, it was their defense that really worried me. So I think Volquez can be successful in Kansas City just because what they do well meshes really well with what he's learned to do well from his time in Pittsburgh with Ray Searidge.
I agree.
Because if you look at his stats, like he had a 3.04 ERA last season, and that was the lowest like he's had ever. And but his peripherals sort of don't make sense. Like his strikeouts per nine went down, but his walks also went down. So you can sort of see, you know, he was sort of trying to get them to put the bat on the ball rather than trying to blow it past them. So
right.
If he's sort of getting those old man, wily old man skills, I think Volquez can repeat what he did last season.
I agree. Now, where do you stand on the other end of that? The hitter that they picked up was Alex Rios, and I believe he'll be starting every day for them playing in right field.
Oh, goodness.
Is there anything to be salvaged there?
I don't like Alex Rios, and I haven't liked Alex Rios for a long time just because of how inconsistent he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just look at his production just goes up and down and up and down. It's been relatively steady the last couple seasons, it looks like, but I mean, he's gonna be, he just turned 34, so he's getting up there in age. A big contribution of what he did was speed, and he's only had 17 stolen bases last season, after which is his lowest since 2011, which he was hot garbage. So, I mean, his speed's good. I don't know if it would be best to actually be playing him over some of the young guys, help develop them. But I'm not a big fan of Alex Rios, but I'm looking at what they have behind him. They don't have much behind him in their outfield depth chart anyway. So
right. He'll be that's what I was just going to say.
Maybe he was the best available for them.
Yeah, they've kind of reached the point where they've graduated all their important players. They could potentially play Jared Dyson. Is that the guy that he's blocking? I mean,
yeah. So
are we excited about him? He's got great defense, good speed, but you know he's not going to be much of a hitter.
No, I was sort of thinking that Dyson would PhD sort of hope they would like try to shift around, keep Dyson in the outfield with Kane and Gordon because their defense works so well together, and then just have Dyson be this sort of 7-8 hitter who's just got a lot of speed, can wreak some havoc on the base paths, but really you have him in there for speed and defense. But I mean, Dyson's getting up there too. He's not as young as I thought he was, so maybe they're just sort of quietly moving him out and Rios out and waiting for the next batch of outfielders to move in.
Yeah, that's possible. So Alex Rios, not too exciting. Moving on to another not so exciting player, Kendrys Morales, is the guy they picked up to play DH.
Yeah.
Did I just sum it up for you? Not too exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Morales is just sort of meh. He's
never been the same since he broke his leg. I mean, that's the bottom line, right?
That's true, yeah. Coming back from that, he just sort of has never been the same player. So he's completely uninspiring. I mean, he's got power potential, you know, hit 25 home runs, which is good in this day and age, but he's not anything wrong, you know, banging the table saying, Kendrys Morales, that's going to put them back into the World Series next season.
It's just not too...
Yeah, and frankly, he's a step down from Country Breakfast, Billy Butler.
Agreed. Where did he go again?
Oakland.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's an athletic now, so.
Billy Butler, athletic, huh?
Yeah, right. They should. Well, I mean, this is the same team. Didn't they have CC Sabathia a few years ago? No, not CC, sorry. Bartolo Colon a few years ago?
Yeah,
So that team was made a liar when it said athletic on the front of a shirt that Bartolo Colon was wearing. So.
Agreed. So their bullpen looks solid enough. Greg Holland had another great year. Tim Collins did well. Kelvin Herrera did well. Wade Davis has settled in to be a really nice reliever. A guy they have on the DL right now who could fill in, just in case Edinson Volquez doesn't pan out, Jason Vargas falls off the face of the earth, Jeremy Guthrie continues to be Jeremy Guthrie, they could just go ahead and add, potentially, when he gets healthy, Chris Medlin. That's a huge deal, I think.
Yeah, I saw that. When I was looking down this, I forgot that they signed him. And that's that seems to be a trend where these teams are taking a shot on a player coming back from Tommy John, just sort of like, hey, you know what, take your time. You're not built into our plans right now in terms of we don't need you to be, you know, you don't need to take the ball in one of our first five games. So, you know, get back. I mean, their pitching staff is serviceable. Vargas and Guthrie sort of make you sick a little bit, but Medlin.
But his end of the rotation, guys, they're not so bad.
Exactly. If Medlin comes back, so you have Ventura, Duffy, Medlin, and then two out of Vargas, Guthrie, Volquez. My guess would be Volquez and Vargas and Guthrie are the same junk player.
Yeah.
but that's a good rotation, and it's a good. If Medlin comes back, that's a good bounce-back replacement for losing James Shields. And the rotation might actually be better than it was last year with Ventura and Duffy taking a step forward.
Agreed. And assuming that Medlin can return and maybe put up some of the numbers he did, was it 2 years ago, that would be – or and what he was supposed to do, because he was a top prospect for the Braves. If he ends up, you know, re-panning out into that, you know, at least middle rotation guy, that is a better rotation than the Royals have had in a long time.
Agreed. So, okay. We spent quite a bit of time on the Kansas City Royals, and with good reason. I mean, there's a lot to talk about there. Personally, I think they overachieved by a good amount. Joe, it sounds like you sort of saw it as the natural evolution of their team building process, but
I did.
But they'll be interesting to see what they do in 2015. But we both agree it's pretty hard to say otherwise that they had a successful 2014 season.
Yes.
So moving on to the next one is the Cleveland Indians, who finished with an 85-77 record. They missed the playoffs, And they're just sort of the very definition of middle of the road. Nothing too exciting about them. They had a couple breakouts. But Joe, were the Cleveland Indians successful in 2014?
I'm going to just barely say that they were, and it's a hesitant yes, because you look at the guys that did it for them. The two guys that come to mind are Corey Kluber and Michael Brantley. Both are, you know, 27, 28, so this could be the sign of a breakout, but it could also be the sign of two guys that are, you know, that played way above their heads last year. And if those two guys don't do it again this year, then they're not going to be the same team.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think that they were unsuccessful, and it has nothing to do with anything that the players did. It's just that the team has not been put in a position to be successful. Their big offseason acquisitions before last season were Michael Bourne, Nick Swisher, just totally uninspiring guys that they're not really being – the squad's not really being put together in a way that that they're going to be successful. And that's despite, like you said, Corey Kluber, Michael Brantley, these guys performing well. At the same time, you know, Jason Kipnis did pretty poorly. Carlos Santana, I thought, was playing poorly, but actually had a pretty good season last year. And then they were hoping for more from Yan Gomes. But I don't know. These middle-of-the-road teams, it's hard to say, you know, definitively one way or the other, if they were successful or not, because you can't tell what they were put together for. Were they put together?
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's hard to even read what their expectations were. Like, were they planning to come in and go to the playoffs? Were they planning on rebuilding? Like, they brought in a bunch of new guys, but then, you know, this year they go out and they sign Brandon Moss. So, like, what's that about? He's 32, and he's been a kind of a fluke on Oakland. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do, necessarily.
Yeah, and that's the problem, and that's why it's hard to say if they were successful or not. And I think by that very definition, you have to say that they were unsuccessful, because if a team's just completely rudderless, just completely directionless, you know, you can't say that they were successful in anything that they did.
That's true. I mean, but some guys, you know, like, the reason I even just said that they kind of were is you see, like, a guy like Carlos Carrasco come out, and he puts together a decent year. Lonnie Chisenhall's showing signs of being good again. It's just – or of being, you know, maybe turning into the player that he was supposed to be as a top prospect. I don't know. Like, I don't know which of these guys to believe and which of these guys don't. I actually look at their team. The aspect of it that I like most about it is their bullpen, which looks really solid top to bottom. I guess that's not a great sign for them.
that their strong suit is their bullpen. And I'm looking at this. It is pretty impressive. I mean, the only guy who had an ERA over 3 last season looks to have been John Axford, who is now a Colorado Rocky as of today. So, I mean, in terms of guys that got a lot of run, I mean, there are some one-offs in here that kind of, you know, CC Lee. Like,
right.
I'm not really worried about the, you know, the child of CC Sabathia and Cliff Lee, which is, I assume, who that is. But, right. You know, Shaw, Atchison, Rzemski, and Allen, I mean, they were all, that was a solid back end of the rotation. And I thought, gotten up ahead, I would have said that the back end of the bullpen, Kansas City had the best, but it's looking like these guys might give Kansas City a run for their money and might actually end up being the strength of the team going forward.
I agree, and maybe even if, you know, they have a glutton of that and could potentially trade off some of those guys to fill in other areas. Because I do think that regardless of what we think about this team, you know, how many of these guys are for real, how many of them aren't, there isn't enough when you just look at it to say that they're not going to have any holes in 2015.
And yeah, I mean, looking forward, there's a lot of players on their squad this year with a good pedigree. You know, like you said, Brandon Moss was a lot of smoke and mirrors, but Jason Kipnis, until last season, was on a pretty nice upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. My annual favorite Yan Gomes on there, Carlos Santana at third, and if Michael Brantley can keep it up, at least some part of his 2014 production, they might be able to get around the fact that they are starting a 32-year-old Michael Bourne and a 34-year-old Nick Swisher who haven't been all that productive for them. So.
Yeah, I'm shocked Nick Swisher's still on the team, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, he's just sort of around. He seems to be the...
Yeah.
There's nothing spectacular about what Swisher does, but he's not so offensively bad that they're going to bounce him out of the league. But, I mean, he hit 208 with 8 home runs last year, but there wasn't much better for him off the bench, so they sort of were stuck with the guy.
Agreed. There's somebody here, and I'm not seeing him in their immediate bench. Let me see if I can find him. Some people like Zach Walters, but he's not the one I'm talking about. Francisco Lindor.
Francisco Lindor. I'm not familiar with Francisco Lindor. Joe, can you fill me in?
Okay, so he is their number one prospect. He is a second base shortstop prospect. They still haven't decided where they want to end up putting him. But he's only 21 years old right now, I believe, going on 22 next year. So he's reaching that point where he's going to potentially make his way into the league. He's played in AAA last year, put up a .273 batting average with 3 steals and 5 home runs, but he played some in AA. So let me see if I can find his full stats from last year. Okay, so he had 11 home runs and 28 steals with a .275 batting average.
Okay.
Not a bad sign for a guy who's 20 years old, or was 20 years old. He could start at AAA this year and potentially make his way into the lineup, which is good because not that I have any worries about Jason Kipnis. But I certainly have worries about Jose Ramirez. I don't know who that is.
And... yeah, I had the same reaction. I was like, Jose Ramirez sounds like just a generated player in a video game.
Right, like one of those gray faces.
Yeah, just generic first name, generic last name. And I mean, it looks like he was a Dominican Republic free agent. They signed him when he was a teenager, so they're probably just seeing what they got in him. But it sounds like Lindor might be the best bet in maybe the second half of 2015, see how he does at AAA, and at least in 2016, he should be there every day. Shortstop, it sounds like, if Kipnis bounces back. So,
right.
That's a good some good insight. I did not know about – I'd heard the name, but I didn't know much about Lindor. So – anything else you want to say about Cleveland? Do you think that Corey Kluber will keep it up this year? Or?
I believe I said on our last podcast or a couple podcasts ago, I just don't – to me, he's like the definition of a guy who kind of comes out of nowhere and then doesn't reproduce. I don't see the guy being – I don't trust breakouts at 28 for pitchers, I guess is my point. It shouldn't take a pitcher that long.
You don't believe in the age 28 across the board? You think it more has to do with, I guess, innings pitched and all that stuff? And I'm the same way. I do want to see a gradual rise too, but what's funny is there was this website that I read. They had people submit who they think is going to win the award next year, various awards this year, AL Cy Young, NL Cy Young, MVP, all that stuff. And Corey Kluber didn't get a single Cy Young vote despite winning it last season. Like,
right.
nobody believes in what Corey Kluber did last year.
Right.
And I want to see more because, like you said, he just sort of came out of nowhere and was – suddenly very, very, very good. I mean, he doesn't even have the highest pedigree on it, this pitching staff. I mean, Trevor Bauer is a much much more touted prospect before
exactly.
Kluber.
As is Carlos Carrasco.
Yeah, as is Carlos Carrasco. And so you think that Kluber if you think Kluber's going to be the ace of this team in 2015, I mean, he's going to take the ball first, but he's not going to be the best pitcher in this rotation, I don't think.
Right. And Trevor Bauer, you know, despite what he kind of showed signs again last year, but it's never been about his potential over the course of a game or a few weeks. It's always been about, can this guy put together a full season? Can he focus and not walk guys? And I'm still not sure what kind of pitcher Trevor Bauer is.
And at this point, that's it's not a good thing that you want to hear, because he's 24. He's sort of got a couple of years here to figure out who he's going to be that person, or else he's going to be out of the league.
Yeah, he could be a Homer Bailey, where he just kind of floats around until he's almost 30 and then he gets bounced.
It could be. Wow, you giving up on Homer Bailey. I remember before you were in love with Homer Bailey.
I was, but then I went back and looked at his stats and was unimpressed again. So that's a bias that's kind of lingered for me.
It's Homer Bailey, so. All right, well, sounds like we put the 2014 Indians to rest. Is there anything else you want to talk about with this squad before we move on to Chicago?
No, they're not really excited. I don't expect them to finish above fourth.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think we both agree then that this next team, the Chicago White Sox, who finished last season 73-89 in fourth place and missed the playoffs, we both, I think, see them as taking a big step forward this year. Agreed?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they could contend for the division this year. They did a lot.
I agree.
But this isn't about what they did this offseason. This is about what they did last season. So, Joe, the Chicago White Sox, were they successful in what they did last year?
Can you go first? Because I got their new roster up, and I need to look at their roster from 2014.
All right. I think that they were a pretty bad team, but I think that they were successful. Top to bottom, their lineup was sort of bad. There's no really other way to put it. It was a poorly constructed lineup with a lot of bad hitters in it. The exceptions being Jose Abreu, Adam Eaton, and that's pretty much it. You could make an argument for Alexi Ramirez, maybe Connor Gillespie, but with what they had, they sort of pretty much did what was expected. But I think that they developed a lot of talent, and they're taking a good step forward for next season. I think that Quintana, they let him get a lot of time under his belt. I think he's going to be a good pitcher next year. Obviously, Chris Sale is one of the best out there. And just the young guys that they had, they did a good job of developing them, not plugging up, you know, positions with guys like Emilio Bonifacio, just sort of guys that are bouncing around the league that aren't going to really do much for you, that are just there as stop gaps. They let their youngins go out there and flail and learn and get some seasoning, and that puts them in a really good position, I think, for 2015, which they seem with their acquisitions to be going in on for 2015.
I agree. Another person that you didn't mention that I think they give a lot of time to, and what I thought was one of the better moves they made